Daisy and Company, and with the Board of Medical Examiners budget. And I am sure that I have asked Senator Wesley not to throw tomatoes or oranges or anything of that nature today, and he promised that he would not. So I'm hoping that all will be well for you. Are there any issues that anybody would like to make a statement before we get started in the committee?
Can I throw a compliment, Madam Chair?
You certainly may.
I'd just like to compliment Kathleen and the entire board for the exemplary work they did over the interim in finding a way to allow an easier application. I didn't want to say easier application, but a prudent application for those physicians that have retired and their licenses that have lapsed to apply their skills in a volunteer, that's the key word, in a volunteer basis in clinics, not only in my district but around the state, to help provide access for those individuals that are indigent or can't afford to pay. So it's great work on your behalf. I very much appreciate your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I may.
Corby?
Thank you very much. I would also like to start with a compliment this afternoon, appreciating the work of the board focused on Senate Bill 786 from a couple of sessions ago. This is a bill that requires our health licensing boards to be intentional, deliberate, if you will, in increasing diversity not only on the board, but looking at how we can accomplish more inclusion, more diversity in the profession. And looking ahead and reviewing your report and your accomplishments around Senate Bill 786, it's clear to me that this is a board that's making progress, and I look forward to hearing more of the details in your comments to us today. Thank you.
Others? Thank you very much. I was going to pass along some kudos as well, but you guys have done such a good job, I don't want Kathleen to get a big head around this issue. But I was at an ag, what do you call it, dinner, or whatever it was, you know, lollygagging with legislators. And
reception,
that's what I'm looking for. Bill Markham was so excited about how you guys help with the volunteer physician piece in retirement. And so I just wanted to pass it on to you as well. Thank you very much.
Yes. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. I experienced the same thing. And could you send him an update? That would really help because he asked me to do it and I've lost his card. Not to pass the buck, but thank you. He's very excited about it.
Not passing the buck, but passing the buck.
Not passing the buck. Yeah, he's excited about the program.
Oh, okay.
I'm excited that she's going to help me out.
Great. Ms. Deborah?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 5527 is the budget bill for the Board of Medical Examiners, and as you noted, Kathleen Haley and Mary Scott are here to make a presentation. So I'm just going to turn it over to them.
Great.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Haley, and with me this afternoon are Professor Bald on my left. She recently retired from the board, and she's a professor at Willamette University. On my right is Mary Scott, and she's our new assistant executive director. She's 7 weeks on the job, so she's breaking her teeth in state government here today. And then Carol Brandt is our accounting supervisor, and she's also graciously agreed to do our PowerPoint for us. And Sean Range is the Department of Administrative Services fiscal analyst. We'll be introducing and reintroducing the board, our services, strategic plan, performance measures, and accomplishments to you this afternoon. In addition, we'll cover the specifics of our budget and the four packages. We have a table of contents for you. And I want to leave you with three messages with this budget presentation. The first is a commitment to public safety. The second is a commitment to quality improvement by measuring our performance. And the third is a commitment to efficiency by providing our services at low fees. The Statement of Purpose and Statutory Authority for the Board of Medical Examiners states that practicing medicine is a privilege and not a right, and that the board's primary purpose is public protection. It does that through the Medical Practices Act. The board is, in essence, a consumer protection agency for medical care. And our mission so states, the mission is to protect the health, safety, and well-being of Oregon citizens by regulating the practice of medicine in a manner that promotes quality care. That mission is carried out through the implementation of our goals, which are set forth in our strategic planning process. Again, progress is tracked through the performance measures. The budget as a whole and the packages in particular are tied to our chief goals and then back to our mission statement. I'd like to introduce you to the board members. They all couldn't be here this afternoon, but I can tell you a little bit about them. There are 12 members. 7 are medical doctors. 2 are doctors of osteopathy. 1 is a doctor of podiatric medicine, and 2 are public members.
Comments on that one? Thank you for the podiatric piece, because we know that that was a real hard piece, board members, for when podiatrists wanted to get on this board. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Chair Carter. All congressional districts are represented on the board, and we've been very fortunate to attract members, both professional and public, like Professor Bald, who are among the finest in the state. We have a photograph for you that we recently took at a board meeting, so you could see who our board members are, and you may recognize some of the physicians or public members as coming from your community. In addition to the goals that are set forth, the board members also have responsibility for determining the standards of practice of medicine in the state. They also represent the board to various professional groups, such as medical societies, hospitals, national and even international meetings. The next slide shows our organizational chart. It's a structure of the board. The board meets as a whole 4 times a year for 2-day meetings. They receive a per diem for that time they spend in the board office. However, there's extensive, and I have to underline that word, extensive reading in advance of the meetings that they do not get reimbursed for. The board also works through committees. Some committees are comprised entirely of board members, like our investigative committee. That meets on a monthly basis, and I would invite any of you to attend any of the meetings, probably the most interesting being the investigative committee. You could see the board members in action. Other committees, such as the Physician Assistant Committee or Acupuncture Committee, include a board member, but also the professionals from that particular discipline. At each of these committee meetings, they review applications, investigations, decide on discipline, and also review policy issues, goals, and administrative rules. The board is 100% other funded, that is by fees, and the majority of the fees come from the license renewals. There is an application fee charged, but the bulk of the financial revenue does come from the license renewal. If you compare our annual license renewal fees with our neighbors, we are about in the middle, and we have not increased this fee in the last 10 years. Since 1999, the board has been guided by a strategic plan, and that's been useful for us because it helps to set direction, and it involves board members, managers, and staff, and we update it regularly. It also helps us to link back to our mission and our individual goals and then tie further on to our performance measures. We have provided a copy of that strategic plan for you in the last tab of your binder. At this point, I would like to have Mary Scott talk with you a little bit about some of the budget drivers.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, the board is operating in a constantly shifting environment. The profession is becoming more business-driven by cost considerations as well as investment drivers. The public are becoming more sophisticated consumers of medical care, and they're learning more about medicine through the media and on the internet. They have higher expectations and outcomes. They are also more likely to seek legal redress if they're not satisfied. They are demanding more complementary and alternative medicine. There are also technology impacts, for instance, telemedicine, online prescribing, online access to medical records change who's providing the medical care and how the information is given to patients. Sophisticated tools like robotics, engineering, simulators are requiring more training and a teamwork approach to medical practice. There is an increased concern over patient privacy and identity theft. The board is responsible to multiple entities, including the legislature, public, licensees, and medical professions, government, the media, healthcare institutions, and law enforcement. We have to be consistent with state and federal confidentiality laws and the demands of the public for protection. We must be compliant with confidentiality requirements, and at the same time, we need to make public information easily accessible. Finally, we must meet rising demands with optimum productivity and remain within budget constraints. The board works very hard to contain costs and to stretch license dollars. We continue to have our website work harder, particularly in the areas of current information to the public. The public now has online license lookup with malpractice and disciplinary action information as well. This is a convenience for the public and a savings for our staff time. We've made all of our forms and applications available on the web. This reduces our need to mail forms and applications, saving staff time and agency dollars. We use state price agreements for purchasing any products that are on the state contract. This also saves both time and dollars. We've listed our current initiatives here, and we'll be discussing our proposed initiatives as we move through the presentation. Now I'd like to reintroduce Ms. Haley to speak more about our programs.
Thank you, Chair Carter, members of the committee. I'll go into the detailed pieces of our individual programs at this point and talk about our major divisions. They are first license services, investigations and compliance, our health professionals program, our technical and support services, and administration. The license services program handles, as the name says, license application processing as well as renewal of about 14,500 licensees every 2 years, as well as rulemaking for all the disciplines and policy issues. The investigations and compliance section is responsible for the timely and fair investigation of possible violations of the Medical Practices Act, as well as monitoring those licensees who are under a board order. The technical and support services division I think of as sort of the infrastructure for us. They handle license verification, our website, accounting, budgeting, human resources, information technology, purchasing and contracting. And the administration handles the general oversight of all the functions and has liaison with the board and outside stakeholders, including the media. In a separate program for the budget is the health professionals program. It's also located in a site off-site from our office. It's in Tiger. There are three staff there, and they provide confidential assessment, intervention, and monitoring services for drug-impaired healthcare providers that are licensed by the board. Now I'd like to go into the license services specifics. The staff there ensure that applicants meet the licensing requirements, and there are different requirements for physicians than there are for physician assistants or acupuncturists. We've gone through in the last year and taken a look at all the applications and tried to see if there are ways that we can have them be as much the same as possible. And I think we've made some strides in that area. But it is a very busy department. In Package 101, which is a technology package for us, we're hoping to be able to allow online license application as well as online renewal of licenses. And in Package 102, which is a workload measure package, we've asked for an additional staff person to help expedite physician licensing. And this is particularly an issue in the rural areas. The staff in licensing are expected to know the education, board certification, the scope of practicing, and licensing rules for all the license categories. And this takes quite a bit of training. And in the last biennium, we've had two staff retire who were with us for 30 years. And that was a loss for us. We're bringing on bright new people, but it has taken us some time to get them up to speed. These staff also work very closely with the board and its committees, as well as with the national organizations entering data and sharing data across state lines. The next slide shows you that our physician licenses have actually doubled since 1994. At that point, in 1994, we had 8 staff. Today we have 9, with an additional half-time limited duration position that you were kind enough to authorize last biennium. One of the things we're asking for this biennium is to make that half-time position permanent, to be able to continue to do those criminal background checks. We've taken a number of steps to address these increases over the years, short of asking you for this position, but we've been under continual pressure to license more quickly. The same is true in the area of physician assistants and acupuncturists. Those numbers have more than doubled since 1994 as well. And one of the things we've been trying to do in that arena is do more cross-training, because particularly with the physician assistant licensure, the board actually approves every medical practice that physician assistants can do. And so we need to have more cross-training so that a staff person who can license a physician can then turn around and do a physician assistant. And we've begun that in the last year. In the investigations and compliance arena, that's the one that has probably the greatest public interface. And they're responsible for fair and timely investigations. They also are responsible for providing a lot of information about licensees to the public. And in a couple of minutes, we'll show you our website and how you can look up healthcare providers from our website. To give you an idea of the workload in the investigations department,
okay,
we actually tracked the number of pages that were given.
I'm going to have you go back for a minute.
Certainly.
When you look at your licensing physicians, look at 204, 205, 206. Were they losing? Were less doctors applying to come to Oregon? What's that difference?
Chair Carter, the numbers are down a little bit for 2006. And if you see the blue, which is the limited license applications,
mm-hmm,
one of the things that the board authorized is for me to be able to sign for those applicants who have no problems with their application. So they don't need extensive board review. It used to be they had to buy a limited license to hold them over until the next board meeting, because only the board licensed, and it was on a quarterly basis. So we eliminated some of those limited licenses. Those licenses also didn't take as many, but the numbers are down for 2006. What our staff are reporting about this month, 2007, January, is that the numbers seem to be shooting back through the roof. So it will need a longer period of time, I think, to be able to assess.
Yeah, I just think in terms of a shortage of physicians in our state, and then all of a sudden less licensing, and I was wondering, was it anything that we were doing as a state or you guys as a board that made it harder, or what it was? So thank you.
I wanted to tell you a little bit about the investigative committee meeting, because that is one of the juicier aspects of the board work, I guess. And if you take a look at the work that the investigative department did to get ready for the last investigative committee meeting, and the work even more that our board members did in preparation, they reviewed 3,000 pages of investigative material and 24,000 pages of medical charts in advance of the meeting. And the reason we're able to track that now is we used to come in and show you our big, thick books that the board members used to prepare, but now we've been able to get them on the little jump drive so we can actually tell you how many pages they've reviewed. We also have a complaint resource officer who assists the public in being able to determine whether or not they should bring a complaint to the board, whether or not that falls within our jurisdiction. Last year, the board investigated 385 final complaints and held 11 investigative committee meetings. But the board's job really doesn't end once an action is taken. They exchange information with the national databases, assist the licensing department, and follow up with those licensees who are under a board order and practicing in the community. The next slide shows you a diagram of our complaint process, and the purpose of this slide is to show you the amount of due process that the board goes through before taking an action.
And there really isn't any average case at the board, but the statistical average to complete a case is 225 days. The national average is 251 days. And most of our cases are resolved within 180 days. The next slide shows you the sources of our complaints.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
Thank you.
Can you just briefly talk to us about the process between the receipt of the written complaint and the preliminary review? My questions are, is every single complaint that you receive investigated? And then what's the threshold that takes it out of the loop at that point or continues it forward?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, every single complaint is reviewed, and everyone is reviewed by both the chief investigator, the medical director, and myself, as well as the board members. Some are put on a consent agenda, and those would be cases that really, in the opinion of this staff, do not rise to a level of a violation of the Medical Practices Act. It's far outside the realm of our act. And the board votes, takes a look at those cases, and makes sure they agree with that consent agenda. But anything that is possibly within the violation of the Medical Practices Act then moves on to further review by the investigative committee, which meets on a monthly basis.
So it would be a vote of the board as to whether it would continue through a more formal review or just be dealt with at that stage?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, actually the board decided that they did not want to delegate to the investigative committee the ability to just close cases without any review by the full board. So the full board does take a look at all the cases. Now, a more formal review would be signaled by the fact that the licensee is brought into the investigative committee, and at that point given an opportunity to tell their side of the story.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further questions?
Thank you. So the sources of complaints are, as you would expect, the public, patients and their families. We also receive complaints from we review all the malpractice cases, particularly those over $100,000, as well as the board itself can open a case. So if the board is reviewing one practitioner and finds that actually they think it was someone else that was responsible, they may bring that individual in as well. The categories of complaints are mainly incompetence or inappropriate care, as well as unprofessional conduct.
This is Madam Chair.
Senator Gorgay.
Thank you. Before we leave that slide, a couple of questions. Going back to the categories of complaints, is there overlap between the inappropriate care incompetence category and unprofessional conduct? Would those be some of the same cases in both categories?
Chair Carter, Senator Gorgay, that's right.
And then the same question around inappropriate prescribing and violation of state federal law. I'm assuming there would be some overlap.
Chair Carter, Senator Gorley, there could be some overlap there, too. Because these are the charges for each, and someone may be charged under multiple areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I have another question about what happens in a case where there's a complaint around mental illness or impaired? What are your options around counseling? What happens?
Chair Carter, Senator Gorley, with mental illness, we always try to make sure that the physician is getting treatment first. And it's not just physician, it's our other licensees as well. If there is a substance use problem involved, then they'd be referred to our health professionals program and no disciplinary action would be taken, and they could be monitored both for their mental illness as well as for their substance use. But right now the statute is limited to the substance abuse, and we are bringing a bill this time, and there's also a package in this budget that would include mental health in our health professionals program. So if we have a physician in the future who has, say, a depressive illness, they could go right to our health professionals program
without having to come before the board. The last resort would be to have to take disciplinary action against a physician for an illness.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing what approaches are being used. And they sound like compassionate approaches. Thank you.
Did I miss anybody on this end?
Okay. Thank you. This slide is, I apologize, it's very busy with lots of numbers, but I did want to draw your attention to the number of public orders, and that was 61 in this calendar year 2006. But this slide does also show the range of options available to the board. Some are referred to remedial programs all the way up to a revocation of a license or even a suspension. And I also want to remind you that with close to 15,000 licensees, really the overwhelming majority of healthcare practitioners in Oregon are doing a great job in practicing very safe medicine. The detail on our health professionals program is on the next slide. And that program, as I've mentioned, encourages the early recognition and intervention for substance abuse disorders, and it is completely confidential. So board staff do not know if someone voluntarily goes to that program. And if the board refers an individual, obviously the board would know about that person's identity. But regardless, if the supervisory council feels that there is any problem with those individuals, they are referred to our board for investigation. It's governed by federal confidentiality standards. And the supervisory council, which is comprised of 5 board members, meets on a regular basis to review those cases. Right now they're monitoring about 93 licensees, and they're monitored for 5 years at a time. The staff there also try to do educational outreach to get out in the community and let hospitals and other organizations know about its existence so that we can get people in for early treatment. The technical and support services is providing current and accurate information to the public, so we are constantly trying to update our website. In looking at 1 year, there were close to 700,000 page hits on our website, so the public is using the website. They also provide technical and support services to the board and to the other employees. They're also responsible for fiscal services, information technology, human resources, purchasing, contracting, facilities rental, and telecommunications. This next slide shows you a copy of the homepage for our website. And there are some things that we are very proud of there. We have recent summaries of board actions. We have a click on about how to file a complaint. In the last year, we decided to put a complaint form on the website. We don't mandate that consumers use that if they want to bring a complaint, but some would like to use the form, so we put one on the website. And the most popular feature, as you would expect, is the licensee lookup. Next month, we hope to have yet another feature, and that's for credentialing organizations. And they have wanted to be able to go online and have primary source there. And we haven't had that available to them, but our IT fellow is just finishing the touches on that, so we'll have that available for them next month. That'll help hospitals and insurance companies that are trying to credential people. To show you a copy of the licensee lookup, we picked on the chair of the board, Dr. Watt. He's out of town, so we figured we could use his name.
Always say love and war.
Right. He has an unrestricted license, but I wanted to give you an example of a physician who has a restriction as well. So I took the case of Dr. Patel, who was in the media in the last year, to show you what a restricted license looks like. And how it says public order on file. And Carol's going to click us through so that you can see that you can actually get a copy of the text of that order.
Can I ask a question?
I'm sorry.
Well, it's okay. And we can finish this later, too. But if someone has a restricted license, what kind of events would lead to that?
Chair Carter, Representative Boone, it could be, usually it's something like sexual misconduct, poor medical care, where there needs to be some sort of probationary period and monitoring in the community. It may be a mentoring situation where they need to go and have more training in a particular area that was causing problems, so that needs to be monitored. In the extreme, they are revoked or suspended, the license is taken away. At times, some physicians will offer to surrender their license. If they have been investigated, the board requires that they surrender under investigation, which means they get reported to all the national databases, so that they can't have problems here and then try to go to another state and have a problem there. In the case of Dr. Patel, of course, he went to another country, and there was no international disciplinary database, so that was the difficulty there.
Representative Garone?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you had a physician involved in both a criminal case and one that you were investigating, do you sit back and wait for the criminal side to go through to find guilt or innocence, or would you conduct an independent investigation?
Chair Carter, Representative Garrett, both really. We do try to wait until the criminal case is completed, because what happens is sometimes a physician, if they get called in, will say they'll have to take the Fifth Amendment because they don't want to have that material. Even though it can't be used against them, they think it could, so they don't want to work with us on the investigation. At the same time, if we learn of a criminal activity, we also let the district attorney know in that county so that they, if they need to take action too. But generally we wait, and then we do our own independent investigation once the criminal case is closed.
Thank you.
We are trying to get our website to do a lot of the work for us, of course, and the watchdog organization Public Citizen, Dr. Sidney Wolf, took a look and ranked medical board websites in 2006, and our board was ranked 11th out of 65 for information available and the ease of use of our website. So we have made some improvements there. The administrative area is responsible for ensuring that the board carries out its mission and is in compliance with all the relevant laws and rules. And we are the most visible part of the agency, so we interact also with the media on a regular basis. I probably get contacted by the media an average of twice a week about one area or one case or another. We have 12 board members and 23 committee members that we make arrangements for and try to have all the information available for them so that they can make wise and prudent decisions and supervise the agency's 5 departments. We also put out a quarterly newsletter that we distribute and put online.
Madam Chair, is your advisory committee selected?
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley. Some are appointed by the board, like the Supervisory Council for the Health Professionals Program, and some, like the Physician Assistant one, the Physician Assistant Association actually gets to choose those members.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. At this point, I'd like to refer you to our 2005-2007 performance measures, and we have 8 key performance measures. They are tied to Oregon Benchmarks 45 and 46, as well as our agency mission. And in the future, we'll be asking that Measure 2 be removed because we feel it's really replaced by Measure 8, which is the broader customer satisfaction survey. In terms of license service performance measures, we find that they do provide a useful guideline for us. We note that the licensing renewals have doubled, as well as new license applications. We have reorganized the licensing department and reassigned roles in the last year, retraining and redirecting staff to try to reduce that number of days that it takes to process a license application. And we are hopeful that if granted, the position in Package 102, as well as the technology package in 101, will be able to lower the number of days that it takes to license a physician in the state.
Can we go back to page 34, Ms. Taylor?
Performance measures? Oh, you're there. Yes, thanks. So, how long could a rehabilitation period last? Is it based upon the degree of the illness or the situation, or what gives me kind of an averaging of how long, if the doctor is in rehabilitation, how long that could take, and then how much more time is how long is that person monitored between them going back to work?
For Senator Carter, for those licensees who participate in our health professionals program, it's generally a five-year program, 5 years of monitoring. They would initially be taken out of practice and probably have to go into a inpatient treatment facility for anywhere from 30 to 60 days. And then they would probably gradually go back into the practice, assuming that both their treatment providers and themselves and their practice partners feel that that's appropriate. Sometimes physicians need to go into a different discipline. Maybe access to drugs as an anesthesiologist, it doesn't work to continue in that specialty. After the 5 years, some who voluntarily participate in the program do decide that they want to extend the care. We just had a supervisory council member leave who decided for himself he had been through the program and he wanted to continue with that program the whole time that he was going to practice medicine, and his intention in going in another state was to do the exact same thing, to sign up with the program because he felt the monitoring helped him.
Thank you.
You're welcome. In terms of the licensed services performance measures, we have held steady there that the denials upheld on appeal have been 100%. If you look at the performance measures for the investigations and compliance department, the same is true in terms of Court of Appeals review and that.
Can I ask a question?
Representative Morgan?
You have an option package to replace your computer system for licensing. Can you just very briefly, because I know you're going to bring that into play when you discuss that package, but what do you anticipate that adding that new system is going to do to your processing time?
Chair Carter,
take away from it, I guess would be the better way to put it.
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, we would like to take away the number of days that it takes to, and we are hopeful. We have six different databases in this office. It's a 15-year-old system, and they don't talk to one another. And so we, of course, try to get our staff talking to one another, which we're doing through our cross-training and trying to maximize the staff use. But what we'd really like to do is be able to have the online application, and we think that would really speed things up. In addition, we do feel we are going to need another staff person, and that's why we've included that in Package 102.
And so you think that with the addition of the staff and the new system, you'll be able to bring your processing time down to your targets?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, we've done a survey recently of other states, and they're closer to 60 to 70 days. We'd like to get closer to the 60 days.
But you're... Okay. So what I'm seeing is that you've been kind of hovering at 60 days through 03, 04, and 05, and in 06 it bumped up. But you're saying that with the addition of new technology and more positions, you're just going to bring it down to where you were in 03, 04, and 05?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, at the very least, but when I look at 06, it's 74 days, and that's so far, that's not acceptable to us.
Then how did your target get to be that as low as it was?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, the only thing I can think of, first of all, the number has increased so substantially, and we were looking at that this morning, and it's doubled since 94. So we never had additional staff as we were going through. And the staff who were doing the licensing had been there for 30 years, and frankly, they were just whizzes. And it took us some time to be able to bring new staff on, train them in all these different requirements for licensure, and get them up to speed. And then, of course, once they were getting up to speed, we decided we needed to pull them out because we involved half the agency in planning for this technology package. So we took 18 of our user staff and said, show us every one of your business functions, because when we go out there looking for a technology package, we want it to be something that's actually going to do the job for you. We don't want to get into a system where it's not working for staff.
Madam Chair, I would submit that there is, I think, a legitimate issue here around where that target set.
Yes. Deborah and I was talking about that earlier today, but we felt that with them bringing in the kind of option packages that they did, that it's going to be better than what it was, even though it might take it back just only down to where they originally, back down to 2002. But at the same time, with hiring new staff and bringing new technology in at the same time, that's a little much to expect them to go any lower at this particular time.
I think that it would be beneficial, though, to have a discussion around this so we would be clear on what we could expect in terms of performance so that we can judge whether the investments have been successful.
One of the things I made a note to myself today in looking at their budget, that there are some of the things that they brought in to us expecting something new to happen, is that it's going to be a matter of faith and trust if they bring us back the actuals. They estimate it this time, but the next time we want them to bring about the actuals in terms of how effective they was at any kind of technology that they have.
Now, well, and all, part of the reason that we have performance measures in there is so that we can gauge whether the investments that we're being asked to okay are actually going to have some tangible result.
Right.
And so it would be, I think, important to get some kind of benchmark from place that they're trying to hit, and then in 2 years find out whether or not they hit it.
Deborah, back to have a sit here. Jumping up a bit.
Sorry, Madam Chair.
Please do. Go for it.
To get Representative Morgan's issue, because she's exactly right. I believe when the agency gets to the point in their presentation where they talk about these policy packages, they're going to talk specifically about what the new targets are and will be, and why there be those targets when they talk about those packages. So I think they'll be able to. And then that's your opportunity, Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, to chime in about whether or not you think that's an acceptable target or not, and that's part of our discussion here.
Thank you.
Further question?
Just an overall comment, Madam Chair. Let's not lose sight of the fact that the caseloads for this agency have doubled over the last, 10, 12 years. Their staff has remained approximately the same, but with some staff turnover. So, well, at some level, their workload's doubled with a diminished capacity. We've got to look at that as we go forward, too.
I totally agree with Senator Westland's comment, but I would add that the point of those targets is to have them be realistic. And so if it needs to be reassessed on the basis of the number of applicants, then we need to have that discussion.
And we'll have that discussion, Representative, as soon as we get over to the target areas,
right,
and they give their performance measures and in terms of where they are, and also the option packages. Do you mind?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For the questions? And they also, for the sake of new members, say that this is one of those agencies, quite frankly, that is being rewarded by coming in early because they apply best practices more so than some of the other agencies. And we're going to work their budget for passage next week. And that's what we want agencies to do, as Representative Morgan was saying, to look at their performance measures, for us to see how realistic those performance measures are, look at the amount of staff they have, look at the endurance of that staff and the loss of staff, and then come up with some, what I call some amicable kind of decisions at the point we get to the decision points about this. But these folk are being rewarded for excellence in their practices, and that's why they're here early as well. So if we can just wait until we get over to the performance measure so you guys can determine whether you think their goals, their measures are realistic, then we can get into that with more detail. Thanks. Further questions? Ms. Haley.
Thank you, Chair Carter. Now I'd like to turn your attention to the investigations and compliance performance measures. And again, we look to the Court of Appeals to see whether or not they're overturning the decisions made by the board. And they are not. So that's 100% at agreement with the board's decisions about disciplinary actions. And the other one is a little bit more problematic for us, and that's the percentage of probationers who have another complaint. Last biennium, you gave us another compliance officer. We, again, had some turnover in those positions, but that has leveled off. And we have two folks out in the field who are making sure that the board orders are being complied with. Let me give you an example of what would be considered a reoffense under this performance measure. We have, let's say, a physician who's been disciplined for inappropriate prescribing of medications. That physician then gets a malpractice case for something totally unrelated to the order for which they were placed on discipline. That malpractice case alone would constitute a reoffense. So what we would really like to do is work with the performance, you know, the progress board and on this performance measure and say, really, a reoffense should only be if further discipline is taken, not just if you have another unrelated malpractice case that isn't even related to the reason that you're under the discipline. So we'll work with the progress board on fixing the language on that in the next biennium.
Madam Chair?
Representative
Cote.
Thank you.
And Representative Ferrara. Thank you, Madam Chair. So that's a very helpful explanation because that caught my eye, too. Are you able to track which are actual reoffenses, for example, not writing a good prescription and doing that again within 3 years? Do you have that tracking? I understand your point with the different reoffense, but...
Chair Carter, Representative Kotek, I think because there are about 230 of them now, we could go back and check that, but I don't know that we have that readily available.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Quillo?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kathleen, I have a little problem with what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, gee, if a physician robs a bank and then later on murders somebody, robbing the bank won't count because it's not a murder. That's going to be a very subjective point to try to monitor.
Chair Carter, Representative Garrett, I think we need further discussion with the Progress Board about whether we want to count any complaint, any malpractice as a problem. And we could do that. But I don't think we ought to use the word reoffend until you've really found, you've investigated that case. Because anyone can bring a malpractice suit, but what is the outcome of that suit and is it a violation of our law are two things that we need to be able to look at. So I think we need further discussion with them about that.
Representative
Munger. I share Representative Gerard's concerns here that the ultimate customers are the public and that their concern is whether they are getting a safe and adequate level of care from these people. And if you have someone who's risen to the level of being on probation and then is still getting caught in the system again for some offense that isn't exactly what the original offense was, I think that there is an issue around the level of care there that needs to be brought to the public's attention.
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, absolutely, and it would absolutely go through the full investigative process.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morissette. I mean, Senator Morissette.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think that the key word is conviction. You know, just because someone levels the malpractice for whatever reason they choose to do that, it may be valid, it may not be. And I think that there needs to be some definitive resolution of that case before they're charged with a new offense, or it certainly isn't a repeat. I understand what you're saying, and I agree, because I think the key word is conviction.
Thank you, Mike. I'm sorry, I still have the same problem. Where there's smoke, there might be a fire. If a physician were to receive five disciplinary actions, but all five were unrelated, that still signals to me, and I think it should signal to your board, let's take a little closer look here. That's what I want assurance that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Chair Carter, Representative Gert, I can assure you that I can't think, and I've been with the board 12 years, of anyone who's been disciplined five times. The board has that same saying that you use, where there's smoke, there could be fire. So where we see repeat complaints, that's enough to say this person probably needs to come in and we need to talk to them and find out what's going on with the practice. The board also has the ability to have somebody evaluated. The whole practice can be evaluated. So there are times that the board will send someone to a full-scale evaluation, not just of their practice, but maybe also of their psychiatric, how they're functioning mentally. Sometimes we're finding that physicians have some mental problems that may impair their ability to practice. So the board tries to get to the bottom of every complaint.
Representative Kotek, and then Senator Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question then about the percent, the actual item you're tracking, percentage of probationers.
Mm-hmm.
So does that include anyone with a public order or just those on probation? Because I was going back to your list. So, for example, would reprimands be in there? I'm just curious how you're defining probationers.
Chair Carter, Representative Kotek, anyone with an order that requires that they be monitored at all.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Representative Kotek essentially asked my question. So these are, just to clarify in my own mind, practitioners that have been put on probation because of an offense that also within 3 years have been put on probation again because of an offense. Is that correct?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, no, that's the problem with the measure. They've had anything that brought them to the board's attention at all. So the fact that a malpractice case was filed, whether or not it was adjudicated against that physician, would be enough to trigger this reoffense. That's why we're saying we want to actually work with the Progress Board to come up with some better, more definitive language.
Okay.
Ms. Wolfe. Thank you. Madam Chair, I just wanted to ask a clarifying question, and hopefully this will help, and I apologize in advance if it doesn't. I was reading in the annual report on this particular measure where you define what a probationer is and what you mean by reoffend. And in re-looking at this, is it that this measure is trying to measure the effectiveness of the rehabilitation program, not necessarily licensing physicians who may have complaints against them? Is that what you're trying to focus on with this measure? Because you're just trying to distinguish between what type of offense occurred. Therefore, if I'm on probation because I did X, what you're measuring is whether I did X again while I was on probation, not I made another offense of another kind.
I hope you say yes,
correct.
That's what I was thinking.
That's correct.
Okay.
Because technically, re-offend then gets into the way, because that offense that they originally offended against is not the thing that made them re-offend. It's a totally different action. And Senator Morissette really kind of said it for me when he said that the key word would be conviction, because anybody could bring a malpractice suit against you. They couldn't like you because of the color of your hair or the color of your eyes or something like that, and bring a malpractice suit against you. But if you've not been convicted, then why should you be sanctioned with another reoffense?
Right.
You know, a reoffending action. And I think that's... does this make sense, Committee? Is this making sense to you? But maybe when we get over further, if it doesn't, we can just make sure that that you are clear in your mind about that before we go any further.
Deborah.
I was just thinking, Madam Chair, that the agency could propose language to change this measure so that it makes more sense and that we understand or you understand what it is they're trying to measure. I don't think necessarily have to go back and work with the Progress Board. So if there was language that you wanted to propose to change,
okay.
We could make that change here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Let me do something here. Let me have you to, if I might, colleagues, work with Senator Cordley and Representative Morgan and maybe clarifying the language.
Is that your members?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, you guys, the rest of you that were asking questions, can please call these two people for input. Appreciate it.
Thank you. The next performance measure is, I hope, a little more straightforward than some of the others. This is the program measure for the health professional program, and it's those that meet the terms of the aftercare agreement with that group, and it's still meeting the target for the five-year period. And again, we will have a separate performance measure for that program once, if the mental health services are added to that program, we'd have a separate target for that.
I am sure, in being with this committee for some time and knowing the new committee people, that they will welcome the fact that you have an option factor that deal with mental health, because all of us recognize it an issue in larger society.
Thank you, Chair Carter. The next performance measure is one that says the number of forms generated on the web, and that one we really want to fold into performance measure 8 with a customer satisfaction, which is our next performance measure. And we designed a very comprehensive survey program that allowed all licensees, whether they were investigated or disciplined or not, probationers, people who participate in the health professionals program, as well as the general public, to tell us how we were doing. Our statistics are not comparable to other licensing boards because people did things a little bit different way in terms of the kinds of things they were surveying. And we didn't find any medical boards outside Oregon that either did this kind of survey. We want to increase the implementation and overall satisfaction rate through the use of technology, and that's in Package 101, the Quality Improvement and Efficiency Package, which would be the technology program. Package 102 with the staff increase in licensing, and Package 103 with the addition of the mental health provision for health professionals program. The next slide shows you our department-wide priorities, and we have included today the governor's recommended budget priorities to you. Now, this next slide is really the fun part for us because it's the point where we get to say things we've done well this year. And just a couple I want to highlight. In the investigations arena, after the media attention around Dr. Patel, we decided to have a performance audit to see how we were doing in the investigations and disciplinary arena.
Can you hold up a minute?
Sure.
This is one of the things I was telling you that has set this agency apart. They went within the belly of their own budget and sought an outside performance audit without the legislature asking them to do this themselves. Go for it.
Thank you, Chair Carter. So we had an outside performance audit that told us that we are doing well. They actually pulled 25 full disciplinary cases and went through all the documentation to see whether or not the board took the appropriate steps, followed due process, and came up with the right result, and they didn't have a quarrel with any of them. But as you might expect, they had some suggestions for ways in which we could do things a little bit faster. And one of their suggestions was that we update our technology. We also had health professionals, as we were talking about expanding that program's mandate, we asked to have an audit of that program as well. And there had never been one of that program, even though it's been in existence for 17 years. And there are some recommendations there that we're beginning to implement. They, too, suggested case management software so that that program could run more efficiently. In the licensing arena, the administrators in medicine actually gave us an award this year, and that is for our online status report. One of the things that happens when a physician applies for licensure is they send in their documentation, but documentation comes from other sources as well. So they're always calling, so is their best friend, their credentialing agency, and their future employer. So we set up a separate call center so they could check out and answer those questions about what's in and what's needed still. But we also put on an online status report so that they could find out online what's missing from their portfolio. In the area of the board held a retreat to decide and discuss the issue of how do you measure, determine, and assure the public that a physician is competent, is safe to practice through the life of their practice. The other thing the board members have done is participate in 4 national summits on that, and they've come up with a document called the Good Medical Practice. In terms of personnel, we have had some turnover, about a third of the agency, and we're in that demographic where people are retiring and we need to be replacing them. In the information technology arena, we worked on the business case for our TechMed project, and we've also come up with a searchable malpractice database that the public can use. At this point,
Senator Portman?
Thank you very much. I would like to go back to the performance audit for a moment. Could you tell us, please, the outside audit was conducted by what organization?
Talbot Carbola.
And is that an Oregon confirm?
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, yes, it is.
And the 25 cases selected, how are those cases selected, and what percentage of the total caseload did that represent?
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, that they totally did a random search and picked the names that they wanted to review. They brought in two auditors to do this. We investigate, I think I said 385 in 2006. And 60 go to final public orders, and they selected 25.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I also applaud your efforts to have outside audits. I was just wondering, how did you pay for that? From existing savings or... Because not every agency can do that.
Chair Carter, Representative Kotek, we have had some savings in the Attorney General area, and part of that, frankly, is you never can predict whether or not you're going to have contested case hearings or not, and so we have had some savings there.
Thank you.
So at this point, I would like to turn it back over to Mary Scott to go into a little bit more of the budget development in detail.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, we will be starting this new biennium with cash reserves of roughly $5.2 million. The agency has not had a major reinvestment project in over 15 years, which has allowed us to accrue this reserve. We do consider part of this funding to be a cash flow reserve that allows us to maintain operations before and during the biennial licensing renewals. We estimate that we will generate $7.6 million in license renewals and other fees during the 2007 through 2009 biennium. Our available revenues will be reduced by approximately $200,000 due to a transfer to the OHSU library. This year, we are here asking for the first time in 15 years to be allowed to use our cash reserve for a significant capital improvement, which we believe is long overdue. That is our Quality Improvement and Efficiency Package 101, also known as TechMed. We have three smaller packages to present to you as well. That brings our budget request to $8.7 million and leaves a cash reserve of $3.9 million. The Board of Medical Examiners has two programs, 015, which holds licensing services, investigations, technical and support services, and administration, and Program 016, which houses the expenses for the healthcare profession program. I'd like to turn to our Quality Improvement and Efficiency Package 101. We have generated a great deal of excitement in our agency for this project. It's been lovingly named TechMed. The Board of Medical Examiners has carefully choreographed the planning process to identify the places where our seven current software systems are falling short. We have identified the paper processes that were developed to shore up the shortfalls of the automated systems. We have identified points where we were not as efficient or as effective as we should be because of the limitations of our current processes and systems.
Can I ask one question?
So, if you have seven different database systems, none of those talk to each other at all?
Senator Carter, our computer technician is able to drop information from one system to another with six of those systems. The seventh one is completely incompatible. And we're only able to move that data using the computer analyst and his knowledge to transplant data. They are not connected.
It's been longer than 15 years, Kathleen. This way, my goodness. Okay.
We have identified points where we are not as efficient or effective as we should be because of the limitations of our current processes and systems. We've listened to our licensees and we've listened to the public as they've expressed their desire for more rapid response and better web functionality. The result of our work is the TechMed Business Case Manual, elements of which are available to you in the appendix of your presentation book. And I believe we did bring our manual with us. Do you know where that is?
Here.
Oh, wait.
I can't believe you guys are still using paper files. Okay.
Chair Carter.
I'm sorry.
We also have to remember most of the healthcare system's not totally electronic either, so.
That's true, you're right. Wow.
Big problem.
It is a big problem.
Thank you. We have a number of business drivers in this project to reduce the cost of licensing administration by providing online methods of applications and renewals, to enhance public safety with case and document management capability, to meet the statutory requirements for performing regulatory duties in a timely manner, to reduce costs by eliminating duplication and redundancy of data and data entry, to maximize the value of information furnished to customers, to optimize the productivity enhancement in consideration of cost, and to keep privacy and security of information paramount. This project has been planned with the public safety in mind. We would like to acknowledge the work of Dr. Ying Ki Kwong, a state employee in the State Office of Enterprise Information Strategic Planning and Development, for his outstanding technical assistance in assuring that our project is in alignment with their Enterprise Information Strategic Planning and Development Strategy, their Enterprise Architecture Recommendations and Standards. Our request is for $493,700 from our cash reserves. Now, we want to stress that we are not requesting a raise in fees to cover this package. We will need $22,000 for hardware upgrades. It's estimated that the basic software package and customization will cost around $249,000. The configuration, implementation, and startup will be another additional $165. And there will also be a small service and support cost in the first year. The total startup for this project is estimated to be $443,100. We do want to fully disclose that any computer system has ongoing licensing and warranty costs, and we estimate that these will be approximately $50,600 per year. I'm offering a small list of some of the tangible and intangible benefits of this program. The list goes on for a number of pages in our planning documents. I'd just like to highlight a couple. We are hoping for the improvement of public safety by identifying violations of law through the correlation of data from the different programs. And we would like
help me with that. Help me with that. Break that down for me. So I understand what correlation means, and I understand what data means, and that kind of stuff. So why do you have to correlate different kinds of data? Is it because of the technological limitation that you have right now?
Chair Carter, if I could answer that for you. Let me give you an example. When a physician renews a license, if they check that they yes to a question, let's say that they had a malpractice history, that document has to then be walked down to the investigative section. That should be able to be all done electronically. Okay. So that would correlate those two departments.
Okay. This is consolidating everything into one computer, is what I'm getting the picture up here. Do you use the state scenic? Are you housed in the state database, or is this a standalone system inside your office?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, it is in our office.
Okay.
Because of the privacy stuff?
And then the other question that I have is, we're kind of having this little side dialogue here about your ending balance, and if you're planning to bring some of your operating expenses down by putting this in, are you looking at possibly lowering down the licensing fees or something like that, so you're staying, how are you going to deal with that side of it?
Chair Carter, Representative Morton, we are in the middle of the pack in the western states. That earlier slide showed that. We would like to not have to go to our licensees for a longer period of time to ask for a fee increase, and it has been 10 years. So we like to extend it out as long as we could.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Clinton.
Thank you, Madam. On the technology packages like this, and this is maybe a question to the experienced ones on the panel, do we have any requirement that in-state folks handle these type of IT projects, or is it just we send these projects out to the best bidder? I'm just curious, because I noticed you're talking about buying an off-the-shelf commercial product and having it changed. So just wondering if there's any requirement in state law to give preference to Oregon-based programmers or whatever.
Sure. Carter, Representative Kotek, we just put the request for proposal, otherwise known as an RFP, out there, and it depends on who bids on it. And frankly, with some of these, there are some states that have put these in, and they're all around the country, and there's actually one in Bend, Oregon, that has done systems in Kansas.
Just follow up. I just think it would be great if we could, you know, have some of these dollars going back into the state's economy if possible, and I just didn't know if that was a preference, but it doesn't sound like it's an RFP preference necessarily for the state or your, in general, I don't know.
I don't know such a law. Maybe the IT people. Were you an IT committee representative on it?
No.
Okay. So I don't think it's state law. I think you would have heard about it before now.
Okay.
And besides, there are so many people in this body who and I'm one of them, who believe that private enterprise should be a part of anything that we do, and we don't want to do protectionism by saying you must do it in Oregon.
Further questions? Ms. Haley?
Thank you. We cannot think of a single project that would have more positive benefits than this one. This will change the way that we do business. We anticipate that this package will affect three of our performance measures, including number six, licensing, number seven, renewal licenses, and number eight, which is our overall satisfaction measure.
Can you hold just one minute?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was kind of the area, I think, that Representative Morgan was asking questions about how approval of the policy packages would affect your target. And with my old eyes, if I'm reading that form right, you've indicated that approval of this package will not change those targets. So if you could just elaborate on that a little bit, or is it that you would have never been able to achieve those targets you're showing for 08 and 09, and that without this package, could you just, does that make
sure.
any sense, my question?
Yes, I try it. I think 45 was an aberration. We hit that 1 year, the 45. So we were suggesting going to 55 for 2008.
But that would be with or without the package?
That's with the package.
So when you set these targets, is this okay, Madam Chair?
Please do.
So when you set these targets, you were assuming that you were going to get the policy package, which is why you're showing zeros in the target impact on this.
That's
form.
Right.
So if I could, what would the target have? What would you think a reasonable target would be if you didn't have this package? I think that's what the committee is trying to get at, is what this is going to do for you.
If we did not have either the position or the technology package, I'd have to say that we're going to probably be still going the way we're going. I mean, we have made as many internal changes as we thought possible. And come up with, we brought in a business consultant on that in 2005 to say, we've been licensing people since 1889. Should we be doing it a little bit better? And we went through and we weeded out the things we thought were unnecessary. We retrained people, redirected them. And we don't feel that we can do it without the technology and the additional staff person.
So a target might have been 65 instead of a target of 45 or 55 without...
That's right.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
If we didn't fund your package, I would suggest realigning your target, because it doesn't sound like it's a very realistic one anyway.
That's correct.
So I think that's what Deborah was pointing out, Ms. Manti, excuse me, was that they looked rather low. Mm-hmm. And that with them being low, it's like the technology wouldn't help you much at all, mm-hmm. you know, to go from one point to another point.
Thank you. I would like to shift to package 102, our workload management package at this point in time.
Let me just ask one question. Are there further questions on 101?
Well, I'm not quite sure what we're going to do here. Are we going to talk about this again when we go into work session and actually make some recommendations? Or
but
what's the process here?
I thought we were going to talk about it again once you and Senator Gordley work with her on this issue.
Okay, but and that will be during the work session that we bring that information back?
I'm hoping that between now and next Monday, the three of you could have been working together.
Okay.
And that was on the one performance measure related to the rehabilitation or the reoffense. I believe is the...
That's right.
That's
one we're working on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm behind on this one.
Do you want us to do all of them?
No. I'm sorry. I confused the assignment there.
Oh, yeah.
This is the one that we had in the beginning. I'm sorry. So we're at this one. What we need to do as a committee is try to work through... I'm sorry, Representative... Morgan, is to work through until you guys feel comfortable, you and Representative Garrard, in terms of this performance measure itself being as low as it is, and it doesn't seem as if they are buying anything with the amount of money they've asked in terms of the increase.
Well, but I think that the issue is that the previous target wasn't a realistic target.
Right.
And so the analyst conversation around the they put in 55 as a new target with the new system,
right.
Which I think given the graphing information that they have given us on page 31 is pretty realistic.
You are saying realistic in what sense of the word?
In with the increase in the number of applications, which we don't have any data on, but what we do have is data on the number of days to process applications, which they're telling us is being impacted by the number of applications and by the technology and the process. That if they are going to change the process to make it more efficient, but because of the volume, it's going to require that target being moved up. I'm fine with making the target be 55 days on the average to process a license application, and just making sure that there is some kind of notation that this has been put in place to gauge the time frames with the new system that they're going to buy.
Exactly. So, but my point is that I thought you were dissatisfied with these days that they had here.
No, I was just trying to understand it.
I see. Okay. That's what I was trying to understand here.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I think that applies to all of the performance measures that are impacted by the policy packages.
Right.
I think it would be helpful, and given the time, maybe not for today, but maybe when the agency comes back tomorrow to talk about these policy packages, you might consider the idea that first listing the targets, this is what it would be in our current world.
Exactly.
Adding these packages or approving these packages will help us get to this target, and I think then they'll have a better idea of the benefit, and as Representative Morgan says, then we'll have something to measure against
right.
next time.
Okay. Are you clear on that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Great.
Further questions?
Okay.
All right, I'd like to move to package 102.
Let me say this. You have 5 minutes. I think I'd rather not move to 102 with just 5 minutes
to go.
And that what we do is start on 102 tomorrow.
Okay.
Are there further questions of direction in terms of information you'd like the senator to bring you back tomorrow? Anybody? No. Okay.
Anything
you'd like to leave with us today other than going to 102?
No, Chair Carter, I appreciate your time and attention to the proposals that we put forward today, and we'll come back tomorrow with the rest of our presentation.
Okay, so you're clear in terms of making sure that we look at targets that were new targeted for today, and then what the money would buy you in 101 in terms of what the target could be for the future.
That's right.
Okay,
I'll do it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.